This is a special half-hour edition of Minnesota Native News from the Net Lake Village on the Boys Fort Reservation. Melissa Townsend and George Strong explore how this small village is taking to the airwaves to meet the challenge of keeping tradition alive in a changing time.
My name is Rhonda Hoagland. I am Anishinaabe.
I think there's a little bit of uneasiness. Are we going to be able to get through the challenges that we face today?
I joked with my class, I said, we'll all be white with little black faces.
Our rice isn't like it used to be. I just think in time that it's going to not be there. And it'll just be forgotten as something that old people did long time ago.
What I want our listeners to hear is us as Native people, and to let them know that, you know, we're still here.
We as a people are healing. What does our future look like? I can't really say for sure, but I am hopeful.
The Boys Fort Reservation is home to the Boys Fort Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. These are Ojibwe people, or Anishinaabe. Net Lake is a small village on the reservation. It's more than 60 miles away from any other town. There's one road in and one road out. The small houses, the elementary school, the tribal government building, the clinic, and the convenience store are all snuggled along the shore of the waterway that is Net Lake. About 200 people live here. Historically, the Anishinaabe people of Net Lake lived off the land. They spent weeks with extended family in ricing camps, maple sugar camps, tending gardens, gathering plants, hunting game. This is where Net Lakers strengthened bonds. They spoke their language, they observed tradition, they practiced their spirituality. Generations of historical trauma brought on by broken treaties, the forced breakup of families through foster care and boarding schools, and the resulting epidemic of addiction rocked Net Lake and the traditions that strengthened its Anishinaabe culture. The elders who remember being part of the rich traditional practices are passing on, and they worry that as they go, their traditions will also go, and the Boys Fort Nation will be weaker as a result. They worry, we've lost so much already. Can we afford to lose any more? But some in the younger generations are embracing new ways to stay connected. They are taking to the airwaves to strengthen their Anishinaabe culture and to remain a strong sovereign nation.
You're listening to KBFT 89.9 FM, broadcasting from Net Lake, Minnesota.
I'm Melissa Townsend. I'm a reporter and producer for the weekly newscast Minnesota Native News.
My name is George Strong.
And what do you do?
I am the general manager of the radio station here in Net Lake.
We talked the other day, and you were saying something about somebody's voice was like too public radio-ish, or just wasn't the sound that you wanted for your station, mm-hmm. You know? Tell me about the sound that you want for your station, how it's different.
Basically, I want it to sound like the people here. I want it to sound spontaneous. You know, that's part of what the definition of Anishinaabe is a spontaneous being. And so I don't want anything to be like really scripted or anything of that sort. I mean, remember that show? I think it was called Northern Lights.
Oh, Northern Exposure.
Yeah, and the dude that was on the community radio or whatever it was that he was on there, and he'd just talk and tell stories and just ramble on.
This is Chris in the Morning coming to you on K-Bear from Sicily, Alaska, in the heart of the borough of Arrowhead. You know, I had a really weird dream last night. I was working on an assembly line with my first true love, Leslie Ferguson. We were making these mechanical frogs that could jump and sing at the same time.
They say dreams are the windows of the soul. Take a peek and you can see the inner workings, the nuts and bolts. I don't understand the assembly line and the frogs are a little confusing. But Leslie Ferguson rings bright and true. First love. We all have one somewhere. Anyway, this one's for you, Leslie.
A cross between that, and then there's a movie called Smokes. I think it's Smoke Signals. I think it's John Trudell that's on there.
Good morning.
And he's running a radio station out of his trailer.
And it's time for the morning traffic report on this rainy bicentennial 4th of July. Let's go out to Lester Falls apart in the K-Rez traffic van broken down at the crossroads.
Big truck just went by. Now it's gone.
And it's very rural. It's on the res, you know, it's out in the country. And
so you've got a 1,000-watt station, covers about 12, 15 miles. Tell me about the beginning. How'd you get started?
We went on the air on July 8th of 2011. When we went to go live, I flipped the switch and there was nothing going on.
Ah!
I forgot to flip another switch back in my office. It took me about 3 minutes to flip it, get things right on that end, run back to the transmitter, hit the play button again, and there we were. We were on the air.
You're listening to KBFT.
And it's 7:33. It is time for our school menu and announcements. And for the Net Lake School, for breakfast this morning, they're having malto meal, whole grain toast, and 100% grape juice. And just a reminder that every Friday, the 6th grade class is selling ice cream to help fund their trip to Chicago. And they would like to thank you in advance for your support. And no birthdays to report today, but if today is your birthday, happy birthday to you.
So now you're not working alone. You're not running from room to room. You've got a staff of 4 people. And you've got this whole set of cultural programming where elders and youth are talking about the language and tradition. Tell me more about that.
We're hoping to try to pique people's interest into understanding or at least wanting to learn more about, let's say, a particular ceremony or a particular word and really what it means. Because, you know, to be honest, for a long time our people, they were really encouraged, like our parents or maybe their parents were encouraged to not be Indian, and they were ridiculed. And so, you know, I see us looking for some direction on how we should live and be here in this little village.
So do you feel like this is a moment in time where there's this sense, you just started talking about it, of grief or transition?
Mm-hmm. We're kind of in a period where, you know, there's people that grew up with our traditions and they know the language, and now they're at that point where probably within the next 10, 15 years, a lot of those elders are going to be gone. I think there's a little bit of uneasiness. Like, are we going to be able to survive? Are we going to be able to get through the challenges that we face today?
Do you want to just say your name?
Okay. My name is Karen Drift. I'm an elder. I lived in Net Lake all my life, ever since I was born.
You teach the language at the Head Start and then at the elementary school too, and
yeah.
Then at the tribal building.
Mm-hmm. See, I go into the infant room, and the babies that are sitting, I'll go, Bizan, you know, be quiet, or nah, you know, look, that means. And these little tiny babies are learning already.
Tell me about why it's important.
Well, I think it's most important for the little tiny ones. If they're not brought up with the language, they're not even going to know there is another language out there.
Can I ask you what year you were born?
I was born in February 6, 1946. I grew up in a very traditional family.
What did that mean?
I had like 7 uncles and 1 aunt. I had like 26 cousins, and we all lived in it was like a little town. All their houses were built all around each other, and my grandpa and his sons built all the houses, and we had big gardens. We all helped in the gardens, and we'd all attend ceremonies. My mom, and she had to go to work, so she worked in Virginia as a maid. She'd be gone all week, and I was just like a baby then, and my grandma took care of me, and my grandma couldn't speak no English. She could a little, but really broken English. I was fortunate to have her take care of me, you know. And everybody around us talked the same language then, you know, even the kids.
Karen married Lester, a local boy who was also from a traditional family. He passed away last December.
Lester used to tell me this past 3 years, he said, you know, what I think, he said, is after you quit teaching, he said, there ain't going to be no more. It's going to stop because there's nobody here that wants to.
Karen says the babies she teaches pick up Anishinaabe like sponges. They're sort of a captive audience. It's the younger adults who are harder to reach.
At the rate it's going now, I only have 2 people in my class. So they'll probably be cutting it out pretty soon. You know, they even pay them to attend my classes and they still don't come. And I said, look, you could make $40 a week. That's $80 every 2 weeks, I say. Like this girl, oh, I think I need like some cigarettes this week, so I'll go to the class. You know, then I don't see him again for another week, 2 days, you know.
Karen's class is at noon on Fridays at the tribal government building. The time and location may be part of the problem with attendance. But overall, she sees only a handful of people left in the village who are deeply involved in tradition.
There won't probably within the next 8 to 10 years, you know, there won't be no more ceremonies or...
What'll be the future without those things for the band?
Well, we're all going to turn white. Yeah, and that's what I joked with my class. I said, we'll all be white with little black faces.
I asked George what he thinks about Karen's joke about turning white.
You know, they used to go out and hunt, they'd go out and gather berries, or they'd go out and gather wood, you know. And it wasn't something where just one family could do it by themselves either. It took more than one family to make maple sugar camp or to make wild rice camp. You know, everybody helped each other. They had to back in them days. And I think that part of it could be missing as like the glue to kind of to understand each other or to relate to one another and have that sense of family.
You know, I have to say it occurred to me, it was like that's what it was to be an Indian person, to engage in all these things in a particular way. Mm-hmm. With all that gone, what is it to be an Indian person? Like, it feels like that's the question in their minds. Mm-hmm. Does that sound right to you?
I think so. I think from a lot of people probably question that. I've seen discussions on Facebook, you know, from people that do live a traditional life. And to me, it seems like they're coming from a standpoint like, well, the definition of being a Native person has changed.
Well, things are different, right? Like economically, technologically. So how do you engage people in traditional ways when life has just changed so much?
What KBFT is doing is it's providing the tool, the expertise. And so if they want to do something on our stories or our creation story, or if they want to do something that's based on, you know, something that's told as a legend, then they'll be the ones that will know how to take that idea and also be able to treat it with respect.
Like the stories from the youth that you're airing.
Welcome to Cultural Crossings, a program that highlights the voices of Net Lake youth.
My name is Kenna LaRock, and you're listening to KBFT 89.9 FM. Minu Mashkiki, The Good Life. Stories of health and well-being from Net Lake School.
My name is Alea Bella. I love springtime because I can put tobacco out. And thanks for the eagles. Eagle has wings and fly high in the air. I am of the eagle clan. And I will fly high in life just like them.
My name is Cecilia Martinez. I'm a girl with quiet confidence. Even though I'm not always sure, of where I'm going or what I should be doing, I trust that I will make good decisions. It's not easy growing up, wondering what other people think of you or if you are good enough to do all the things you dream about. All I can say is stay positive, believe in yourself, and good things might happen.
There are changes happening among people in the village that will impact the future. But there are things changing outside the reservation, too. I'm talking about mining. And right now, it's having an impact on the way of life. And very likely, it'll impact the future.
The first one started with polymet. And the next one I did was the TTAC. And I went to MinTac.
Mary Bell Isham is listing the mining companies that work on the Iron Range. PTAC, MinTac, UTAC. Her job is to collect stories from band members about the cultural significance of land in areas where mining expansion is proposed. This is mandated by two national laws, the National Environmental Policy Act and the National Historic Preservation Act. She collects the interviews, transcribes them, and then puts them in a report that goes to the mining company and to the lead federal agency in charge of the process. Most often in this area, that's the Forest Service.
And this is the final report that the mining company gets then.
And what happens to that then?
I imagine they just throw it on their desk and leave it there. I can't see anything happening with it.
These reports aren't collected for the purpose of stopping mining. The point is to document the historical significance of the land that will be impacted. And if it's important enough, the mining company will need to mitigate damage to the area.
I was going to read you what I did on the interview.
Okay. Mary Bell wrote her own testimony describing the significance of the land around Boys Fort.
Can I hold this so it isn't...
She takes my microphone and holds it as she reads me her report.
My name is Mary Bell Connor Isham. I was born and raised on the Boys Fort Indian Reservation until the age of 18 when I married and left the reservation.
It's rich in detail, describing the animals Anishinaabe hunted from one season to another.
Winter hunting for the Ojibwe people was fishing through the ice, trapping beaver and other animals for both meat and pelt. A favorite of mine was the snowshoe rabbit. My mom fixed the snowshoe hair many different ways. I can still taste the soup.
She describes the plants they picked for eating and storing.
They also dug wild onions and picked wild grapes, butternuts, hazelnuts, and many types of berries. As with these harvests of each season, they offered tobacco as a sign of respect and as a spiritual offering for food.
It's clear survival was absolutely tied to hunting and gathering on the land that spreads out well past the current boundaries of the Boys Fort Reservation. So if the mining companies and the federal government are wondering if there's any culturally significant land in areas where mining is proposed, the answer from Mary Bell Isham is, yeah, all of it. And most importantly, the areas where there is wild rice.
In the fall, the harvesting of wild rice is about the most important food for the Ojibwe people. Legend has it that the Ojibwe people were told by prophets to travel west from their ancestral lands on the Atlantic coast to the land where food grows on water. I am reminded of another journey when the Creator fed his people for the 40 years that they remained in the wilderness on a substance called manna.
Protecting wild rice is a real concern for many tribes across northern Minnesota. They've always retained their hunting and gathering rights on land they ceded to the United States. But when industry like mines, pipelines, railroad tracks want to build on these lands, tribes have rarely, if ever, been able to exert control over where, how, or if this construction happens. Tribal members are left attached to the land, but without much control over what happens to it. And wild rice is dependent not only on the waterway where it grows, but on the entire watershed flowing into that basin.
Our rice isn't like it used to be. I just think in time that it's going to not be there.
And what will that mean for the next generation?
It'll just be forgotten as something that old people did long time ago. And I don't think kids actually know right now that that's part of our heritage, and it should be protected for the sake of our people.
You know, Net Lake is a living being, and it's also a large natural lake. So eventually it will change as all things change.
Tribal Chairman Kevin Lisi says the tribal government is doing all it can to protect wild rice and the traditional harvest.
We're really, at the same time, trying to maintain the balance of the economic opportunities for band members, the historical significance, as well as maintaining the lake.
What's your take on how you can influence the land use developments around the boundaries of the reservation that will impact the lake?
We have a partnership with MNTAC to test the water quality of the waters coming into Net Lake.
MNTAC is a taconite mine near the Boys Fort Reservation. All these mining operations produce wastewater that contains sulfate. Research has found high levels of sulfate in surface water kills wild rice. So the state limits sulfate in public waterways to 10 parts per million. But industry has been pushing the state to abandon that limit.
I think we've always been adamant that the 10 parts per million, that's the standard that we can live by.
I want to ask you this question. Why, this might sound confrontational, I don't mean it to, I just want there to be clarity. Why don't you want to just stand up and say, no changes? Why don't you do that?
Well, you know, it would be fine if we could do that, you know, but we also have to be cognizant of the whole. We also have several businesses that are profitable because of the northeastern Minnesota economic situation. In fact, our largest operation, the Fortune Bay Resort Casino, depends on a number of guests coming through to visit.
Mm. So it sounds like it's just a balancing act. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think, you know, everything we do is in balance, and this is no different.
I wondered how Mary Bell Isham felt about this balance between the tribe's businesses and traditions. I wonder if she felt like the tribe should roll back its initiatives.
It sounds like you want to go back to a simpler time where maybe people didn't have as much, but things were more straightforward. Am I getting that right?
You're not getting it right there, because I think Indian people deserve a good way of living. We had a hard time when we grew up. We didn't have running water. We didn't have lights. There was nothing here. We'd wait for a truck to come in to bring us some food.
Now the tribe has more resources, and Mary Bell has other concerns.
See, I see that part of it. Now I see this part of it, where we're going into a lot of things that happens when people are poor and searching for a way to make themselves happy.
Drugs?
Yeah. It's drug addiction. It's what I pray for the younger generation, to be more conscious of who they are, and they were given a reason to be put on this earth, and they should look for it, to find it.
To Mary Bell, the traditions around the wild rice harvest are united with a sense of purpose and identity for Anishinaabe people. This is because, to her, it's cause and effect. When the traditional harvest is lost, the people are lost. Kirk Goodsky works with KBFT as a production technician. He's lived in the village since he was young, and he seems to have a keen eye for what's happening with its people. In a lot of ways, he agrees with Mary Bell, but he thinks tradition is making a comeback.
We as a people are healing. What does our future look like? I can't really say for sure, but I am hopeful, because we are carrying some of these traditions and values that have carried us through these dark periods in our history. The people who came back damaged from what they lived through at the boarding school, and then their children not having grown up with the language or the traditions, and now they're coming back, so that gives me hope.
So there are generations of Net Lakers who didn't grow up with much tradition, and you think they're seeking it out now?
There's stigma that I'm Indian, I'm supposed to know how to do this.
Oh,
you know,
yeah?
That's the stereotype that we were taught through the schools, through TV, but not everybody is like that. I'll hear, oh, I wish I knew that, but I don't want to ask this because I'm supposed to know.
Kurt says KBFT, for anyone who tunes in, provides access to that history. You can hear stories by elders that fill in those knowledge gaps. Or you can hear work by young people that shows how tradition and modern life do coexist every day.
Here's this little elementary person talk about how good it feels to do this or to have that pride in their family. There's this one young woman.
My name is Victoria Ryan.
I want to say woman, even though she was, I think, fifth grade.
I am a thinker, and I have a good imagination.
She made a reference to Princess Leia.
Sometimes.
I was like, okay, Princess Leia.
I like to pretend.
She said, I want to be a strong
that
warrior.
That I am a warrior, like Princess Leia. Someday, I will grow up to be a good fighter, just like her. I will fight for my family, and for the good in everyone.
I just got chills when I was listening to that. It was just, wow, okay, these traditions and values, it's not necessarily pertaining to Anishinaabe, but just good values that these kids are being taught and shared in school.
My name is Dakota Villabrin. My clan is the Northern Lights. Whenever they appear, I go outside and I lay down on the ground to watch them sparkle and light up the sky.
People were saying that our culture was going to disappear, that it was going to go away. And, well, I can tell you now, having participated in interviews and becoming more aware, it's out there and it is growing.
KBFT, with its spontaneous sound and stories from Net Lake youth and elders, is a new way to teach tradition. For now, babies in the village are learning the Anishinaabe language. Families still gather for ricing on Net Lake. There are still powwows and ceremonies in the village. And as some of the elders of Net Lake pass on, some of the younger generations are taking to the airwaves to keep their traditional culture alive.
When we first went on air here back in July 8th, that evening, after I made sure everything was up, everything was running, I believe the first song that I played on the air was a powwow type song. And I remember driving home that night feeling such pride. And it was a summer day, a beautiful day, and I was watching the trees when I was driving and the beat of the music, and I could just imagine all these trees just dancing to the beat. And it was really great. What I want our listeners to hear is us as Native people, and to let them know that, you know, we're still here.
For Minnesota Native News, I'm Melissa Townsend.
I am George Strong.
Special thanks to Kurt Goodsky, Tony Nichols, Diane Richard, Aaron Warhol, and Marie Rock.
This was a special half-hour edition of Minnesota Native News.
Minnesota Native News is produced by Ampers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, made possible by funding from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota.